Eliezer, we're in the middle of Perek Chavav. Last week we started speaking about the 10 tests of Avraham Avinu. And the mission of us says that Sarim Nesayinus just asked about Avraham Avinu, but the mission of us in Perek Hay does not specifically speak out what were the 10 tests of Avraham Avinu, and that is left for the Mefarshim to speak about, and the Rishayim and other such people. And Pirkei Eliezer is one of the opinions that goes through the 10 tests of Avraham Avinu, like we spoke about last week. You didn't get a chart, so here's a copy of last week's chart. You want one?
Sure. Yeah.
So just a quick recap of where we're up to. We're up to the fourth test, but we'll quickly say over. The first test was that when Avraham Avinu was first born, so he was hidden under the ground, because Nimrod wanted to have him killed. The second test was that when Avraham Avinu destroyed the idols of his father, so Nimrod's Beis Din Paskin that Avraham Avinu should be incarcerated in jail. He was put in jail, and then afterwards he was thrown into a fiery furnace and survived. That was the second one. The third test was this happened in Avraham Avinu's hometown, Ur Kasdim. So then Hashem told Avraham Avinu to get out of Ur Kasdim and go elsewhere. And they left Ur Kasdim and they went to Haran. So that relocation of going from Ur Kasdim to Haran, that's the third test. What I didn't mention last week is that Reb Avram Azulai, the grandfather of the Chida, he wrote the Chesed L'Avram, Vig Mukubo. So in his Pirush on Masechas Avos, he asks the question of Pirkei Eliezer. He says, why do we count Avram going from Ur Kasdim to Haran as one of the tests, but not when he went from Haran to Eretz Canaan? That should be the test, going to Eretz Canaan, not going to Haran. Why does Pirkei Eliezer count going to Haran as a test?
That's but, the whole point, leaving the land that he was born in, or something like that?
There was the leaving the land in which you were born, and then there was going to the promised land. So one was that he left the land which he was born in, and then he went to a different land. And then a second step was that he went to the promised land. So that's a question that Rav Azulai asks. But that was the third test of Avraham Avinu. Now we're up to the fourth test. So the fourth test of Avraham Avinu comes there, it's Canaan, and he encounters difficulties there. Nisoyin Haravi, the fourth test. Miyayim shenivru shamayim v'aretz, from the days that the heavens and the earth were created, loivor rov ela bimei Avraham. A famine never came to the land except in the days of Avraham Avinu. That was the first time there was ever a famine. And the famine didn't exist in all the lands of the world. Rather, it was centrally located in specifically in Eretz Canaan. That was where the famine was. Why? In order to test Avraham Avinu, and in order to bring him down to Mitzrayim. Shinema, as it says in the Posuk, Vayhi Rov Ba'aretz, Vayered Avram Mitzrayim. There was a famine in the land, and Avram Avinu went down to Mitzrayim. Right? Avram comes there, it's Canaan, the promised land that Hashem told him, you'll go there, he goes there, and what happens? He can't make a parnasa, there's no food, there's nothing to eat. So the test is, how's he going to react to that? Is he going to start complaining to Hashem and feeling bad or whatever? Or he's just going to do what he has to do? And what's his reaction? We don't find that he complained or he had any chisarn in his bitachon. He did what he had to do. Go to Mitzrayim. That's what he had to do. Now, interestingly, we said that this was the first test. This was the first famine that ever existed in the world. So the Radal brings in the Medrash in the Bereishis Rabbah. The Medrash of Bereishis Rabbah goes through. There were ten historical famines. In the time of Tanakh, and two of those famines were from before the famine of Avraham Avinu. It says in the pasuk, it says in the Medrash that in the time of Adrishin there was a famine, and it says again that in the time of Lamech there was a famine. So the Radal says that Pirkei Eliezer is disagreeing with that Medrash and saying, no, the famine in the time of Avraham Avinu, that was the first one. There was no famine in the time of Adam or Lamech or Tafka in the time of Avraham Avinu. I was thinking that maybe you could argue that this was the first famine in the recreated world after the Mabul. Like we saw in different facets, in different aspects, the world was destroyed by the Mabul and sort of recreated, then it was like a new beginning. So you could say, like, after that new beginning, this was the first famine.
Yeah,
Maybe you could answer it like that.
Does he have another Medrash to be Samechon?
No, the Pirkei Eliezer is a Medrash to be Samechon. So the Radal says that it could be that the Pirkei Eliezer saw it in a pasuk. Because by Yitzchak Avinu, when Yitzchak went to Gror, so it says in the pasuk, "Vayhi rov ba'aretz," there was a famine in the land. Milvar haro'ov harishayin asher haya bimei Avram. Besides the original famine, that first famine that was in the time of Avram Avinu, there was a famine in the time of Yitzchak. The Rosh of the pasuk, "Milvar haro'ov harishayin," besides the first famine. So the Radal says that Pirkei Eliezer could understand that Harav Harishon doesn't mean just mean the first famine that we spoke about in Chumash over here, but literally means that was the first famine that ever happened in the world. That's what the Radal has to say. Pshat Pirkei Eliezer. Another Nukuda is like this. We said, why did Hashem bring a famine in Eretz Canaan? We said, Ladasoisoi, to test Avram Avinu, Ulohirida Lemitzrayim, and to bring Avram Avinu down to Mitzrayim. So the question is, it sounds like from here that that Hashem specifically wanted Avram Avinu to go down to Mitzrayim. The point of bringing the famine was to test him, to see his reaction, and also to bring him to Mitzrayim. That was part of it. That's what it sounds like from the Medrash over here. Now, the Ramban and Chumash disagrees with this point. The Ramban and Chumash, he says very strongly, he says that Avram Avinu was in some degree was chayte. He was sinning in the fact that he went to Mitzrayim. Meaning, Hashem really expected him to tough it out and stay in Canaan, even though there was a famine. And he did a sin. He did some slight sin, at least, that he went to Mitzrayim instead, and went to try to find where they had food in Mitzrayim. That's what the Ramban says. That's considered a sin. Right. It could be that Yitzchak is slightly different because Yitzchak was supposed to be a korban oila, and a korban oila is not supposed to go out of Eretz Yisrael or really out of Yerushalayim. But so it could be that's a different thing, that Hashem didn't want Yitzchak to go to Mitzrayim.
But there was a famine just for Avram. What did the other people do during the famine?
What did the other people do? I don't know. Maybe they toughed it. I don't know. They roughed it, whatever it's called.
Didn't they
imported food or.
Don't get tough or tough.
Look, it's hard to believe that the whole country. when they go and get tough, they're tough. It's hard to believe that the entire Eretz Canaan went to Egypt.
No, but maybe 10 people went to Egypt.
Okay, fine. So the Ramban says that he Avraham Avinu didn't have to be one of those 10 people. He should have stayed where he was. He should have lived it, even though it was in a tough situation. He should have stayed. That's what the Ramban says. So
somehow or another, next week we'll see, or in 2 weeks we'll see that there's a famine in Canaan, and Yaakov Avinu somehow or another has food.
Right.
Because the only reason he sends the sons down to Mitzrayim is to. To get food,
right?
That, hey, listen, you know, we're not going to brag that we're okay. So that's the only reason to send them down there.
Right.
So some people, even in the famine, had food.
Right. It could be they had a special bracha. I don't know exactly how it worked over there. But, so the Ramban is basically arguing head to head with what it says in Pirkei Eliezer. Pirkei Eliezer said Hashem wanted to bring him down to Mitzrayim, and the Ramban is saying, no, Hashem didn't want him to go to Mitzrayim, and it was a sin that he went down to Mitzrayim. And the Radal brings a Zohar, and he wants to say that there's two opinions in the Zohar, and one goes like the Pirkei Eliezer, and one goes like the Ramban. The Radal has a whole shtickle Torah about it over here. But what I wanted to bring out was a different point, that the Rashash, Mesachas Avos, on that Mishnah where it says that there were 10 tests of Avraham Avinu, so the Rashash brings down this Ramban that says that Avraham Avinu was sinning in some way that he didn't go down to that he went down to Mitzrayim, and the Rashash says that according to the Ramban, you have to say that the famine is not one of the 10 tests.
Okay.
Because if it's one of the 10 tests, he failed. Right? So the Ramban, so the Rashash says that according to the Ramban, the famine is not one of the 10 tests. Now the problem is, as I mentioned last week, the Ramban in his commentary on the Chumash, He doesn't explain what the 10 tests are. But they recently printed a Ksav Yad of a drasha from the Ramban called Drasha's Teres Hashem Tvima, and in that drasha, the Ramban himself speaks out specifically what were the 10 tests. And over there, as we see on the chart, oh, you didn't get a copy of the chart. Here's a copy for you. In number 13. Number 13, one second. Somebody got a copy of the chart that has only one side. You get only one side? No? Okay. I made a mistake. Okay. Number 13 is the Ramban, and Nisayon number 3 is the famine. So you see that the Ramban himself counted the famine as one of the 10 tests. So I don't know what to do with the Rashash anymore. I think what you would have to say is like sort of hair splitting. You would have to say that the test was to see his reaction, not to see his reaction vis-a-vis Hashem. Is he going to complain to Hashem? Is he going to be a chesaron in his bitachon? Is he going to bring him to a lack of bitachon? That was the test. What he does, that necessarily wasn't really part of the test. Like Hashem didn't really, him going to Mitzrayim isn't considered failing the test, even though it's not. It wasn't considered the right thing. You have to say something like that. What?
Wasn't it a Pisaron and Hishtadlus?
Maybe he was doing. I hear. It could be that would be considered the proper Hishtadlus. If he felt that's what Hashem did to me, so that's the situation that I'm in. As opposed to saying, like, what, oh, Hashem, how can you do this to me? Or, I don't believe that Hashem really sent me to Eretz Canaan or something like that. He was saying, no, Hashem sent me to Eretz Canaan. This is the situation, so I'll go to Mitzrayim. As if, this is all considered what Hashem wants me to do, all part of it. Okay, so that's the third test.
So then
the fourth test.
Going to he gets, if he says, why Hashem sent me to Eretz Canaan, you can't combine the two. It's actually one test then. Because then, sending him to Canaan, and then there's a famine, it's combined. If you say, why are you sending me to Canaan, then he's going back to the first test. Or the test of going back to
uh-huh.
Let's face it, sometimes, I lose my job or something like that. I lose my cool, all right, but it doesn't mean, Hashem isn't Hashem anymore.
Right.
So I don't think famine is such a big deal.
Right.
I mean, it happens. Famines happen in natural occurrences.
Right. Well, not before now, with the...
Well, according to Pignosa, this was the first time it ever happened. But yeah. No, but you could always expect that something might happen and you're not going to be able to get food, Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Even now we daven for food and for pranasa, every day. So obviously it's an ongoing problem.
Right.
In Seder Sfei Tshuva we make special brachos for pranasa. So pranasa is an ongoing thing. It's no big thing, it just happened to Avraham Avinu. It happens all the time.
I think it's a bit different when famines, it's talking about people dying, starvation, right? They don't have like a little plant to eat, anything, not water, anything. They're going to die. So bringing Avraham Avinu to a place where there's famine, so it's like, why did you bring me here?
Because it never
reverts
back to the first test.
Yeah, so you're making me, go to another place. So why bring me here?
Why bring me here?
Maybe he brought there.
It could be the first test was just the traveling itself.
Yeah.
And then the second test was like, are you going to stay there even despite the situation? I can hear why they're not two exactly the same tests. Uh-huh. What are you saying?
Just like, why have him go down there? Why not to Chicago? Because he had to see where his children were going to be for 200 years. So, just like he showed Abraham that he was going to kill everyone in Sodom, so too he was going to show him, look, this is where you will be in heaven. He told him, your children will be Avadim.
Right. Well, I don't know if Avraham Avinu. We can't say that Avraham Avinu knew that that's where it's going to happen.
No, but he knew. But that's not right. I'm not saying that this is, he's showing him in Dafka.
He's just giving him, making him familiar with the idea. I hear.
Ma'isa'avot simon lebonim.
What?
Ma'isa'avot
simon lebonim. Right, so we have Avraham Avinu going down to Mitzrayim foreshadows Klal Yisrael going down to Mitzrayim in later years.
Right.
We're in Perek Chavav, up to the words Nisayon HaChamishi. Page Resh Chav Beis in your print. Fine, so that's the fourth test.
The
fourth test of the famine.
Some
who?
Guy, I just saw it yesterday, the other day, some guy
what? He what?
Some guy.
Who what? He wrote what?
He wrote a whole...
Based on our lectures that he downloaded from TorahDownloads.com, he got our shiurim and he...
Yep.
No. Very good. In Hebrew. Fine. We're up to the okay. That was the fourth test. Now we're up to the fifth test. The fifth test is going to be that Sarah was taken by Paro. The abduction of Sarah by Paro. And I argued last week, and maybe we'll see it a little bit this week. We'll see it this week, and we'll try to see it. You know, am I right or not? That the Medrash, one of the Mefarshim I just saw says it explicitly. We're going to say that the fifth test is that Sarah was abducted by Paro. But also included in the fifth test was when Sarah was abducted by Avimelech. Those two stories are considered the fifth test. Yeah, we'll see. We're going to see that. The Medrash talks about it, and then like starts with Melech. Like, Nisayon HaChamishi, the fifth test, Shenilkacha Sarah Ishtai Le'isha, that Sarah, his wife, was taken to Paro as a wife. When Paro took Sarah, we're going to see that he brought her a ksuba and everything. He took her as a wife, not as a concubine, and Paro decided he's going to marry her. V'chiyeshlecha Adam Shiraya Sheishtai Nilkacha Le'ish Acher Ve'edei Kareya Es Begadov. Do you ever find a person who sees his wife being taken and given to a different man and he doesn't tear his clothes in mourning? That makes him very sad and puts him in a lot of pain? Of course. Usually when a person sees such a thing happen to him, he reacts in a very strong way. Like that's what we find with Shimshon. When Shimshon's father-in-law gave his wife to a different man, so Shimshon was very upset that his father-in-law gave her to somebody else.
What do you do? Killed everybody?
No, his father-in-law said, don't worry, she has a sister, you can marry the sister instead.
So he took a whole bunch of animals and tied their tails together and
he... Right, well, yeah, he got his revenge on them with the foxes.
He set them going in all the fields and they burned down a whole bunch of fields in the police.
Right, but he also got to marry the sister. Pashtus, I don't know.
How did that turn out?
No, after
yeah. But, you know, a person's going to react strongly.
Christian said, who did it? They caused it. So they went to his father-in-law's house, they burnt it down together with their inside.
There you go.
But instead, we don't find that Avraham Avinu reacted strongly. Ella, this line over here is a little bit hard to read, and the Mefarshim speak about it, but Ella, be'etza l'kacha, shalei kara ve'eleha. We'll translate it literally. It says, rather, with advice he took her, and he didn't come close to her. Not clear exactly what that means.
Who's the he?
What's the advice? What's that talking about? So the way the Marzu explains, first of all, the Rav Chaim Falaji says that we don't know how to understand the real understanding of this line in the Pirkei Avot. Rav Chaim Falaji says we don't know what it means. But the Marzu attempts an explanation. He says that what it means is that with Atzas Hashem, and that Avraham Avinu recognized that by Atzas Hashem. With the eighth of Hashem, Hashem was the one who made it that he would take her, and he relied on Hashem that Paro won't come close to her. That's what the Mizu how he explains it. Yeah, we're getting into that in a moment. And the Radal sort of changes the girsa and says instead of Ela be'etsa lekacha shalei karav elaha, the Radal changes the girsa to. That he believed in Hashem, that he relied on Hashem, that Paro is not going to come close to her. Fine. Rabbi Tarfon says, "Ba'isa halayla shenilkacha Sarah imenu." On that night that Sarah, our mother, our matriarch, was taken, "Ba'isa halayla leil Pesach haya." That night was the night of Pesach. Ve'hivi Kodesh Baruch Hu. Al Paro va'al Beisai negoim gedolim, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu brought upon Paro and his household great afflictions or great punishments. Lohidiyai shekein hu asid lahakis es Mitzrayim benegoim gedolim, to inform Paro that this was going to happen in the future, that he's going to smite the Egyptians with great afflictions. Shenemar, it says in the pasuk, Vayinaga Hashem es Paro negoim gedolim. The Hashem smit Paro with great afflictions. The Yalkut Shemayni, when it brings down this medrash, it brings a different pasuk. It says in the pasuk, which is this pasuk is the introduction to Makas Bechorus. In Parashas Boy, it says, Oid nega echad uvi al paro ve al besoy. One more nega, one more plague, I'm going to bring upon Paro and his household. Right, so the Zayis Ranan, which is the Pirish from the Magid of Rav on the Yalkut Shemayni, the Zayis Ranan explains that the Mashmos is the word Oid nega, another plague. Meaning, as if to imply that Hashem had already brought plagues to Paro and his family in a different context, without not talking about the exodus of the Jews. And what context is that? That was this story when Sarah was abducted by Paro. That's the way the Yalkut Shemayni brings to this Midrash. Now, there's an interesting discussion over here. We said over here that the night that Sarah was abducted by Paro, that night was Leil Pesach. Now, what about the night that Sarah was abducted by Avimelech? What night of the year was that? So it seems pretty. We have a few rayas that night was also Leil Pesach. The Medrash Tanchuma, first of all, Tanchuma Yoshan in Parshas Balak Simin Yud Aleph, as well as Targum on Megillas Esther and Perek Vav Pasuk Aleph, they both say explicitly that the night that Avimelech took Sarah, that was Leil Pesach. They say it explicitly. And then we find the same thing in one of the piyutim that we say on the Haggadah of Pesach. We say, Oyiz Reiv Nim Iflesa Balayla. It's a famous piyut that we say in the end of the Haggadah by Nirtza. It starts off, Uvechein Vayihi Vachatzi Halayla. Now we're going to speak about different things that happened in the middle of the night. And it lists off a whole bunch of stories that happened in the middle of the night. Now the question is, all those stories that happened, that the piyut mentions, do they only happen in the middle of the night? Or did they also happen in the middle of the night, Dafka on Leil Pesach? So it happens to be that most of the stories, it's pretty clear that they did happen on Leil Pesach. So like the question is moot, and there's only a few instances where it's questionable whether it happened on the night of Pesach or it didn't. But the fourth stanza in that song, which is it's a very old song. It's written by a python named Yanai, who lived in the time of the Gemara. His name is Yanai. He lived in Eretz Yisrael in the time of the Gemara. So Yan, the Pir writes in the fourth line, Danta Melech Gror b'chaloyim laila. You judge the king of Gror in a dream at night. And Barbanel, in his Pirush on the Haggadah Shel Pesach, he writes that all the things that are mentioned in this Pirush, they all happened on Leil Pesach. So according to the Barbanel, it comes out that Sarah was abducted by Avimelech on Leil Pesach. So just like we said over here in the Medrash, that Sarah was abducted by Paro on Leil Pesach, Sarah was also abducted by Avimelech on Leil Pesach. Okay, so let's go weiter. Rabbi Shua ben Korcha says, because of his great love for her, Paro wrote in the Shtar Ksuba all of his money. He wrote down in the Ksuba that he's giving her, writing away all his money for her. The Radha has a slightly different wording. It says, Paro me'avasoi oisa kosav. It's the same thing, it's just a different way of conjugating the sentence. But what did he write? Ben Kesef, Ben Zohav, Ben Avodim, Ben Karkois, whether we're talking about silver or gold. In Mitzrayim, we always write silver before gold. One of the Mefarshim says because in Mitzrayim they had more silver than gold, even though usually gold is more precious than silver. But yeah, I speak about that a little bit in my Sefer Yevamos. Ben Avodim, Ben Karkois, whether slaves, whether real estate, he wrote all of that to her. And he gave to her as an inheritance, specifically as an inheritance, this land of Goshen. Therefore, when the Jews would later come down to Mitzrayim, they would settle the land of Goshen, because the land of Goshen belonged to Sarah Imenu. That's what it says here in the Medrash. He gave her gold and silver and servant slaves, The Radal says that when the Yalkut Shemayni brings down this Medrash, so it adds the word, oh, besides Avadim, it says Ben Shfachis, female slaves, maid servants. Over here it doesn't say female slaves, just Avadim, which are male servants, male slaves. So the Radal says that it makes more sense to say female slaves, because what's a woman going to do so much with a male slave? For a woman, you give her a female slave, and she helps her with whatever the duties the woman has. Like we have them in the Mishnah, Misachas Ksubis, and Daf Nun Tes Amud Beis. So the Mishnah says, you know, like if a woman gets married and she brings in one female slave, so you know that female slave takes care of, you know, these responsibilities, and she's also taking care of these responsibilities. And then the Mishnah says, you know, if she brings in two, so she splits the responsibilities like this. And if she brings in three, different ways of splitting the responsibilities between the woman and her personal female slave.
One question.
Yeah.
Why Parah didn't say, oh, like a toes, give me back the things. Oh. The thing I put in there, like silver.
Oh. So let me tell you a story. There was once a couple that were getting married, and they wrote a tnai in their marriage that the husband is going to bring for his wife. He's going to bring her an evet. She wants an evet. He's going to give her an evet. That was the tnai in the ksuba. So fine. So they get married, and you know, a few days after the wedding, so the woman says to her husband, you know, where's my Eved? We made it tonight, you're going to give me an Eved, where's the Eved? So he says to her, don't worry, the Eved's coming. Right. The next day, there's a knock at the door. She opens the door, and there's a little midget standing there by the door. So she says, who are you? And the midget says, or whatever, I don't know, it's not politically correct to use the term midget, no? You have to call him like the vertically challenged. So the shrimp. The shrimp.
Whatever. And no one's gonna sue you. It's not a graphic.
So the shrimp guy. He says, "What do you mean? I'm your Evan." She says, "You're not an Evan. You're a little pig squeak. You can't be an Evan. You're a little shrimp guy." No. I'm your Evan. So she goes. She turns back to her husband. She says, "Look, we made a stipulation or a condition with our marriage that you're gonna bring me a slave, an Evan. And what do you bring me? You bring this little midget guy. He can't do anything. You know, I need someone to lift the table, or lift the refrigerator, or whatever, help me out with the house." He said, "I can't do anything. He's not an Eved." My husband said, "Look, he has all the dinim of the Eved. He's Mamish Eved Knani, Lamahadrin. He has all the halachas of the Eved. I said, I'm going to bring you an Eved. I got you an Eved." She says, "What is it? Okay, fine. You know, we're going to Beis Din. We're going to Beis Din. I want to annul the marriage. Mekachtos. Mekachtos. You're supposed to give me an Eved. What? Megachtos. It means it was a sale under false pretenses that I didn't know what I was getting. So they go to the Beis Din, and the Beis Din discusses it. Megachtos, right? So they go to the Beis Din and they're discussing. The guy is he's a short guy, but Maisa, he's an Evan, right? He said he's gonna be an Evan. He brought an Evan. And the other guy, the other Dayanim are saying, no, but he's not really, no, he's an Eved, but like, what's he going to do? He can't really help her out. So in the end, what do? The Beis and Paskins, the halacha is, he's considered an Eved, and it's a good marriage. The husband fulfilled his obligation to bring an Eved. That's it. So afterwards, the woman says to the Dayan, she says, it's... He's a short guy. How can you say that this guy's an Eved? How can you say that he's fulfilling the obligation? How can you say my husband is fulfilling his obligation? So the Dayan said, "You're right. It's a little bitty Eved."
Come on.
I know the punchline wasn't worth like the whole long story.
Yeah, that's not worth. Because it's so long, I thought it was serious.
Anyway, okay. So why wasn't it Mekachtos? So it's a good question. First of all, the Radal said the Radal. It seems to be the Radal is saying that the Radal seems to be saying that really it'll end up that Sarah gets all these things. The gold, the silver, the land, the real estate, the avadim. She gets to keep all the stuff that are listed. But that the tnai was that she only gets to use it as long as she's his wife. Or like as long as she's living under him. But once she's no longer his wife, so then she's not going to get to keep all this stuff. Now the question is, what are we saying about Eretz Goshen? It says, the fikach, because Paro originally wrote that Eretz Goshen should go to Sarah, so therefore the Jews settled in Eretz Goshen when they came to Mitzrayim. But why did the Jews get Eretz Goshen? All these things went back to Paro after Sarah died, after Paro died. Why should they keep it? So it's a good question. And it's an interesting point over here that the Ramami Panu speaks about. The Ramami Panu was a great Italian sage, lived about around a little bit before the Arizal. I think he lived a little bit before the Arizal. He writes in a sefer called Kanfe Yoina, Chelik Dalad Simon Samach. He has a little twist on what happened over here. It says that after the whole story that Paro, it was revealed that she was really married to Avram Avinu, and Paro took her, under in a way that he wasn't supposed to take her. So really, Paro was obligated to pay damages to Avram Avinu. He messed up the family. He gave him a bad reputation. He forcibly kidnapped her. Whatever it wasn't so nice. So he really has to pay her as a damager, as a mazik. And the halacha is that a mazik has to pay mimeitav haaretz, mimeitav sadehu. He has to pay from the choicest of the land, the best of the land. So the Ramami panel says that besides the fact that when he wrote his ksuba to Sarah, Paro gave her Eretz Goshen, which that's going to go back because he's not really going to marry her, but he still ends up giving her Eretz Goshen as a way of paying for the damages, because Mitzrayim Mazik, because Eretz Goshen was the best of the land of Mitzrayim, so he's giving her the best of the land because that's what a Mazik is supposed to pay, the best of the land. That's what the Ramami Panos says. It's an interesting point.
Is that also why Abraham left Mitzrayim with a lot of money and a lot of...
Yes. That's what we're going to see in a minute. Yeah. Rav Yosef Chaim Mibagdad, also known as the Ben Ish Chai, so he has a sefer on Chumash called Oid Yosef Chai. The beginning of Parshas Vayechi, he has like a whole lengthy discourse about this. He doesn't mention Rami Pano by name, but he mentions this idea and he speaks the whole thing about it, about how Eretz Goshen was like the land of Kedusha within the Tumah of Mitzrayim. It's a whole thing about it. Interestingly, the Radak in Sefer Yeshua, in Sefer Yeshua, when it talks about the names of different places in Eretz Yisrael, so there was a name of a place called Goshen. Perek Tazvav Pasuk Nun Aleph in Sefer Yeshua. So the Radak says that Eretz Goshen, that's where the Jews lived in Mitzrayim. It's really part of Eretz Yisrael. So like everyone is like, what? That place in Mitzrayim, how's that part of Eretz Yisrael? It's very hard to exactly understand what he's talking about. The Pashup Shad is that, when I remember driving, when we drive from New York to Lakewood, so there's a town, in, I don't know if it's in New York or it's in New Jersey, there's a city called Goshen.
Neither.
It's neither? Where is it?
Not between New York and Lakewood.
Where is it?
It's either on the road between New York
and the Catskills?
Or it's by Vineland.
By Vineland. There's somewhere in New York, there's a city called, or a town or a village called Goshen.
It's about Orange County. Okay. It's Middletown.
Yeah. So there's a town called there's a town called Goshen somewhere, and I also seem to remember that in Florida there's another place called Goshen. I remember once when I was in Florida, I remember seeing such a thing. So the name Goshen is just the name. To say that it's Dafka, that same place, well, that's what the Radak says. It's interesting.
Like
the same name.
Yeah.
Rekker and Cheger, whatever. Rekker and Cheger.
Is that a religious term? I don't know.
Probably originally probably was.
They got it from the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
You sure it's not on the road from to Lakewood?
He's gonna check.
It's not down the 9? It's not on the 9?
It is on. No, it's no. It's whatever it is, it's probably south of Lakewood.
South of Lakewood.
Take your pick. You want to argue with me about geography?
No, what's faster, to New York or by train?
From where?
That's a joke.
No railroad. Where? I can't see. Tell me where it is. It's Goshen. It's off Route 70 or Route 6. It's on the way to the Catskills.
Okay.
I
just remember coming across. I don't remember exactly
where. It's a road sign that says Goshen, but Route 17, when you go to the Catskills, you don't actually pass. You have to leave Route 17 to go to Goshen, because once I did, because I just wanted to go there.
Because you're going to the city, you went to Goshen.
Well, I was going up to the Catskills, and I wanted to go to Goshen, so I went to Goshen. I didn't even tell you when, but you don't want to know.
Okay. What else did
Pyro?
Goshen, New Jersey, 2001. And another thing that Pyro gave over to Sarah was he wrote his daughter Hagar, who was Pyro's daughter from his concubine. He wrote her over to Sarah as a shivcha. And the way the Pirkei the Blizzard says it, it sounds like this was separate from the Tanai of Pyro marrying Sarah. Marrying, quote-unquote, marrying Sarah. How do we know that Hagar, the mitzvah, the Egyptian Hagar, was a shivcha? Shnemet says the Pasuk. The Sarai, Eishes Avram, lo yoldoloi. Sarai, the wife of Avram, didn't give birth to any children. V'loh, Shivcha Mitzris Ushma Hagar, and she had a Egyptian maidservant, and her name was maid, handmaid, whatever they call it, and her name was Hagar, and that was Hagar, the servant of Sarah. We'll probably speak about her in later program as well.
Is that where Hagar came from?
We're saying that's what we're saying. Hagar, how did Avram Avinu get an Egyptian maidservant? He got her because Pyro, who was this Egyptian maidservant's father, or illegitimate father, or whatever, gave her over to Sarah as a maidservant.
Does it tell anything about the Egyptian society? Maybe they're telling us that they're preferring male over female. Like according to like the, what worth?
What do you mean?
What's more? What's better? Like whatever the value of a slave or a person, like when you're male, is you know higher than a female. And why? Because the Pharaoh himself was given, you know, even over the what's it called?
I'm not sure what you're trying to say.
They didn't give him a son as a slave. They gave him a daughter as a
maidservant. No, yeah, it's not going to give a son. Is what I'm trying to.
Oh, it could be. It could be. I don't know. He was giving it to Sarah. It could be that for Sarah, like the Radal said before, that like we add in the word shvachos besides zavadim because shvachos is more helpful to a woman to have a shivcha. So he gave her a shivcha because a shivcha is more helpful to.
Yeah.
You're saying why did he dafka give her a female servant instead of a?
Will Pharaoh give a male a son to
an illegitimate son? You're saying.
Yeah.
It could be. I don't know. I don't know.
Avram Avinu is a slave.
We don't find such a thing.
But you see, afterwards, when he did give him, it says,
Right, but we don't see that. We only see that he would give away an illegitimate daughter. He wouldn't give away an illegitimate son.
But how is he was her father or another brother?
He was her father, but not through his wife. Okay, whatever. It's called illegitimate because it's not through his main wife or through.
It has a
Yeah. Okay. Fine. We're not talking about a Jew. Anyways, we're talking about a goy. But. Yeah, but it's not. It wasn't considered like that's a socially. You know, she wasn't his wife necessarily. Mm-hmm. No, she didn't live in his house probably. But. Hishkin Pyro Baboiker, Nivol Vinichbaz Shlekara Vlasara. Pyro woke up in the next morning after he abducted her and he was confused and confounded that he wasn't even able to get close to her. There's a very interesting Chassam Sefer in like three or four places. Chassam Sefer writes this huge Chiddush that nobody else writes this and is against like explicit sources from like Rishonim and Midrashim and everything. But the Chassam Sefer writes that Pyro actually forced Sarah. He actually had relations with her and he forced her. And the Chassam Sefer says, based on that because Sarah didn't get any pleasure from it, she made it sure that she didn't get any pleasure. So that's why the Jewish women, when they went to Mitzrayim, in Golos Mitzrayim, when they were exiled to Mitzrayim, they were able to guard themselves because they had the schus of Sarah. It's a huge chiddush that the Chassam Sefer says, everyone takes him to town for that. But
he's the only one who says it?
Yeah, as far as I know. If you find someone else, I'll know.
It means that he's a Das Yochid.
Yeah. But it's just an interesting thing that he...
Is anybody born out of that religion?
With no, Le Matzino. Should I call the sir? But then here in Pekin Oza, it says that he never even came close to her. So, the Kerel Avram, Pyro called to Avram Avinu, V'omar Lo, he said to him, Harei Ishtecho, V'chol Shtores Matneseh, Ima, Leich, V'al Tamid Ba'aretz Azeis. Here is your wife, and here are all the documents, whatever, and the presents, the presents from the documents that I gave her. Take it and get out of here. Don't stand in this land anymore. Shneimar, it says in the pasuk, Hinei ishtecha kach v'leich. Here's your wife. Take her and go. Because of Achrav, Vayitzavolov Pyro Anoshim, and Pyro commanded men to make sure that you know they get rid of them, and that was it. They're on their way. One second. And the Radal says that the Medrash is going into the details a little bit over here because it's coming to tell us this idea of Maisa Ova Simin Labanim, that whatever happened to the forefathers is sort of foreshadowing what's going to happen to the children. And just like Avraham Avinu ended up going to Mitzrayim because of a famine and went out with great riches, so the Jews are going to end up going to Mitzrayim in the time of Yaakov Avinu and end up going out with great riches. Yeah, what do you think? It's an interesting thing that the Lashon that Pyro used when he told Avraham Avinu to get out, he says, "Hinei ishtecha kach v'leich." Here's your wife. Take her and go. Kach v'leich. It's a two-word phrase. Kach v'leich. Take and go. This two-word phrase, kach v'leich, only appears once more in Tanakh, and it'll be I didn't find anyone who speaks about the connection between these two stories. But when we're talking about the story of Eliezer finding a shidduch for Yitzchak. So he finds Rivka, and then when it's time for him to go, so he has like a whole argument with Rivka's family. They're like, "No, let us stay for a little bit." And they're like, "We'll ask her this, whatever." And at the end, they acquiesce and they say, "Here, Rivka lefanacha kach v'leich. Here's Rivka in front of you. Take her and go." It's the same expression, kach v'leich. I'm just wondering, like, what, if any, would be the connection between these two stories?
Basul died, he's dangerous.
So what are you trying to say?
They saw that, he's there and Basul dies. So, this guy is...
They don't want to mess around.
They don't want to mess around. Goodbye, guy, you're having a bit of trouble. You're bad luck.
Why arguing in the first place? They're there for a couple, until... Whatever,
until
dawn, and
then
discussing the whole thing.
And then they
realize
the
was dead.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
but
that's common
denominator
between
the
truth.
What, that something bad happened. Okay, but something bad happened in a lot of places in Tanakh.
They don't say
Avimelech didn't say kach v'leich. Avimelech had a different way of saying it.
And Pharaoh didn't say to the Jews when he left to Moshe.
Right, he didn't. Get out of here. Yeah. So you have to know exactly what. It could be that they both objectified women. It could be that that's the pshat, that both Pyro and the family of Rivka objectified the woman. So it's like an object here. Here's the thing. Take it and get out of here. I don't know. I have to work on it. Think about it, a good word and how to explain it. But weiter. Kol mashenasan l'sara. Now the medrash is gonna without subtly segueing into Avimelech, I'm just going to start talking about Avimelech like that. Everything that, the same things that Pyro gave to Sarah when he tried to marry her or whatever, so too Avimelech gave the same things to Avram. Shinama says the pasuk, Vayikach Avimelech tzoyin uvokar v'avadim u'shvachis. Avimelech took sheep and cattle and slaves and female slaves, and he gave it to Avram Avinu. So now we're starting to talk about Avraham Avinu. The Radal talks about the difference between why when Pyro did it, he gave to Sarah, and Avimelech he gave it to Avram. What's the difference between the two?
Sounds like Avimelech was the one objectifying.
What?
Sounds like Avimelech was the one was objectifying her.
It could be. You have to see what the Radal is doing. I don't want to get into the Radal, but he talks about this. Ma'avir Avram bevoye be'eretz Kanan ad eretz Plishtim. This line also, it's very difficult. The next few lines over here is a little bit difficult to read, but it gets a little bit technical. Ma'avir le'avram b'vaya be'eretz Kanaan ad eretz Plishtim. The way is he passed over to Avram from the land of Canaan to the land of Plishtim. What does that mean exactly? So the Marzu explains that it's talking about Hashem. The Hashem, when he had Avram Avinu going around all of eretz Canaan, So Hashem brought him to Eretz Plishtim, and now we're going to talk about what happened in Eretz Plishtim. That's the way the Marzu explains it. The Radal says a different pshat. It says, don't say the word mavir, that he passed him, but say na'avor, we should pass over. And the Radal explains that, who's speaking over here? Saying the editor of Pirkei D'Blezer is speaking to the reader. And he's telling you, right now, we're going to pass over the story of Avraham Avinu's life, and we're going to skip a bunch of things, and we're going to start talking about the abduction of Sarah by Avimelech. And we're going to pass over all the other stories, and we'll speak about the other stories in the subsequent prakim. Because what happens in the next prakim really happened before what we're going to speak about now. And we're skipping that because we want to specifically speak about this story of Sarah being abducted by Avimelech, because it has to do, because it's connected to the story of her being abducted by Paro, because it's like similar stories. Fine. Now we'll read it. We'll read the Medrash. We'll explain Pasha Pshat. We'll speak of some of the difficulties with it, and then we'll say some other Pshatim and what the Medrash is really supposed to be saying over here. V'hakol tzofui lifnei Kadosh Baruch Hu. Everything is foreseen by Kadosh Baruch Hu. We've had this expression before a few times in Pirkei Avos. Kol tzofui lifnei Kadosh Baruch Hu. That Hashem foresees everything, and you, in the context, that usually means that because Hashem foresees everything, He sets up in place, you know, what's going to happen for what's going to happen now for what's needed later. So Hashem set up va'avimelech hayu kol nekevei spesei akoreis. Avimelech, who was the king of Gerar, in the land of the Plishtim, the Philistines, so all the female people in his household were akaris. They were not able to have children. Afilu ad beit zekinim. Even the eggs of the lice weren't able to reproduce. Nobody in his whole household, his whole palace, no one was able to have kids. The way the Ratah explains it was that because no one was able to have kids beforehand, so Avimelech decided that I need somebody, in order to have kids, I need somebody who has a special extra zchus, someone who has a special merit, and that person will allow me to have kids through that person. So therefore, when Sarah and when Avraham and Sarah came to the land of the Plishtim, so Avimelech said, oh, this woman is a tzaddikus, so I specifically want to marry her, and then I'll be able to have kids through her. V'sholach Avimelech v'lokach Sarah. Avimelech sent forth a messenger or whatever, and he took Sarah. Sovo l'hamid mimen abonim. He thought that he's going to establish through her children. That's what it says in the Medrash. That all the people of Avimelech's household weren't able to have kids, and therefore Avimelech Dafka wanted to marry Sarah, and therefore he took Sarah, and he thought he was going to have children with Sarah. That's Pasha Pshat over here, what's going on. Another adult points out a few difficulties with this pshat, but the first and foremost is that other midrashim and even the Gemara in Bava Kama, it seems to understand differently. It says that the Gemara says that because Avimelech abducted Sarah, so the punishment was that his whole household can't have children. That was the punishment. Here in Pirkei Eliezer, it sounds like no. First, his household couldn't have children, and therefore he abducted Sarah because he wanted to marry her. Not that it was a punishment. And the Radal says that it's very hard to say that our Medrash over here is disagreeing with Chazal in like every other place. Say that. So what's the pshat over here? So the Radal changes the Girsa, and the Marzu changes the Girsa. Rabbi Yomi Izmer asks the question. I don't think he changes the Girsa. Rav Chaim Falaji sort of takes a middle approach, where he says that really the Gemara is right, and also over here the Medrash is right. And he says that Chazal tell us that all of the holes, all of the people's orifices, their bodily orifices were all closed up. In the Plishtim, their bodily orifices were closed up, meaning their ears were stuffed, their noses were stuffed, their mouth, they couldn't eat. That's what happened. So the Rav Chaim Falaji suggests in Par Echad, suggests that before Avraham Avinu came, only their rechem, their womb was closed, that they couldn't have children. After Avraham Avinu came and Avimelech abducted Sarah because he wanted to have children with her, then he got a punishment that not only was the wombs of the women closed, but all the orifices of all their bodies were closed. That's what Rav Chaim Falaji suggests.
For how long?
Until Avimelech released Sarah, and then Avram Avinu is going to daven for her.
And then
how long did that take? What?
How did they survive?
It was a nace that they were able to survive. Because if you can't breathe, then you can't survive.
It didn't last that long. He got the message fast.
Yeah, it lasted at least overnight once. Because he saw it in a dream. What?
But wasn't he speaking?
Oh, so a friend of mine asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky that question. My friend wrote this in his Sefer Derech Chaim on Alei Torah. He wrote this question. He sent this question to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. So that we find in the Psukim that there's people talking and listening and speaking. There was a conversation over there. So how can there be a conversation? You can't hear. You can't speak. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky said, you have to say that not every single person got afflicted by this. Like, there were some people that had it and some people not. That's what you have to say. But yeah, it's a good question.
But now the question is, what happened after Sarah and Abraham left Avimelech?
Yeah.
Were they able to have children or
not? Yes. We're going to get to that in a moment. We'll see that at the end of the parak. Fine. So the Radal suggests reading it like this. He says, it says that Hashem took him wherever, or Avram Avinu went from Eretz Canaan to Eretz Plishtim. We're skipping over from Avram going to Eretz Canaan to when Avram went to Eretz Plishtim. And then the next line is supposed to say, V'sholach Avimelech lokech Sarah sover l'hamid min abonu. Avimelech sent forth a messenger to take Sarah because he wanted to have children with her. And then the next line is, V'hakal tzofu l'fnei Kadosh Baruch Hu. Everything is foreseen in front of Kadosh Baruch Hu. What did Hashem put in place? Yorad Michol HaMalach, and we're going to see the next part is going to say that Michol HaMalach came and threatened Avimelech, etc. That's the way the Radal says it. The Marzu has a slightly different twist on it. The Marzu says that the way it's supposed to read the message is like this: that Hakol Tzofu Lefnei Kadosh Baruch Hu, everything is foreseen in front of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Sholach Avimelech V'lakach Sarah. Avimelech sent forth a messenger to take, and he took Sarah. He thought he was going to have children with her. Lefikach, therefore, Hayakol Mekevis Beis Shel Avimelech Akoreis. Therefore, all the females in the house of Avimelech were Akoreis, they weren't able to have children. Meaning that was a product or a punishment of the fact that Avimelech abducted Sarah. And Marzu says that what was Avimelech thinking? Says that because Avimelech knew that Sarah was going to have children, because Hashem, the Malach said to Sarah, that Sarah is going to have a child. So everyone knew about that nevuah somehow, and just for some reason they didn't know that she was married to Avram, but they knew that there was a nevuah that she's going to have children even though she's 90 years old. So Avimelech saying, oh, I'll take her as a wife and she'll have children through me. It's also a little bit difficult because according to the Marzuv, Hakol Tzofui Lefnei Kodesh Baruch Hu means that Hashem saw a way to bring them a punishment after the fact. Usually Hakol Tzofui means that Hashem did something beforehand which is going to affect something that's going to happen later. So it's a little bit difficult to put it into that Lashon. Now, what are you saying, Rabbi Pomerantz?
I thought Rashi understands it like that. Rashi said it was because...
Yeah, that's the Pasha. That's the Gemara in Bava Kamma. Because he took her, he got an Einish. But it was his understanding it the opposite way.
But quickly, what would change if before that it were double balanced and after it they balanced? What would change? Nothing changed.
What?
We're going to see.
Yorad Michol HaMalach V'Sholav Chabar LaHargoy. Michol the Malach came down to Avimelech and he took out his sword and he was ready to kill Avimelech. Omaloi, so he said to him, Zed din mishpat emes lahargeni b'mashala yadati. So Avimelech said to Malach Michol, said, this is the truth, this is the justice of Hashem, you're going to kill me over something that I didn't know? Shinema, it says in the Pasuk, Agoy gam tzadik ta'arig, are you going to kill a tzadik? Are you also going to kill a tzadik? I mean, Avimelech is saying about himself, I'm a tzadik, I didn't know that she's married. So you're going to kill me over something that I didn't know about? I'm an oinus. We say oinus rachmana patre. You have to know if we say that by a guy, but what?
That's why I said
before. Oh, 1 second. He said that she's my sister, so that's why I married her. I didn't know that they were married. So the Michal said to him, no, Harshem Eisha Saish Kinovihu, return the wife of the man because he is a Navi. Umimchal Lamad, and you're gonna say, ah, you didn't know? No, he learned from you, you know, that he should lie to say that she's my sister instead of saying straight out that she's my wife. From you he learned that that's what he has to do. Why? Because Adam Shabaliir, a person who comes to the city, Al Iske Achila Shalin Isai, on about matters of food, they ask him. You know, you're visiting a town, and say, oh, you need something to eat, how can I help you? Where are you sleeping? Where are you eating? Etc. But Al Iske Ishta Ain Shalin Isai, but who's that girl with you? That's your wife or that's your sister? You don't start asking questions like that. You start asking, you know, you have arrangements, you have this, you have that. You don't start asking, who's this girl with you? From the fact that you start asking, who's this girl with you? I saw that you're not, you know, you're not such upstanding people. So I decided I had to lie and say she's my sister because I was scared. You know, maybe if I said it's my wife, you're going to kill me and marry her. So I said that she's my sister because I see what type of people you guys are. Oh, so Rabbi Epstein pointed out, why did Hashem send the Malach Michal? We know that Gavriel is the Malach of Din, the Malach of Fire. He's the one who carries out punishments. So if anyone's going to come to kill Avimelech, it should be Malach Gavriel, not Malach Michal. So why Dafka Michal? So what are you saying? You were about to say something, no?
No,
you
were about to say something.
I was about to say something?
I was just asking.
How did you know I was about to say something?
Because you were saying that I have.
Oh, so...
I have to come up with something. So it was a chesed to B'nai Yisrael that the Jewish that Avimelech would be...
Oh, so that's what I was going to say. We said in the last parak that Michal is the sire of B'nai Yisrael. It's the angel of Kal Yisrael, right? So what was needed for the foundation of Kal Yisrael is going to be that Sarah is not going to be married to Avimelech. So in order to bring that about, it has to be that you have to kill Avimelech. But it's not an angel of Din, it's really an angel of Rachamim. So Michal, it's fitting that it would be Michal. Rabbi Leo Meizmir in V'loy Oid Ella takes a slightly different approach. It says that in the last parak we said that which one was the angel that told Avram Avinu, informed Avram Avinu about the birth of Yitzchak? That was Michal. So part of Michal's job was to bring about the birth of Yitzchak. Right? So part of his job is to do anything that would impede on that mission. If Sarah ends up getting married to Avimelech, Yitzchak will never be born. So it has to be that Sarah is going to marry Avram, is going to stay married to Avram. So we have to get rid of Avimelech. So part of informing Avram Avinu about the birth of Yitzchak is coming out and threatening Avimelech so that Sarah will go back to Avimelech. The lashon of the pasuk is Hashav Eisha Saish Ki Navihu, return the wife of the man because he is a Navi. Now, let me ask you a question. If I abducted a guy's wife, yeah, and the guy is not a Navi, am I allowed to keep her?
Probably yes.
Yeah, you are?
Probably yes.
It says, return him because he is a Navi. And if he's not a Navi, you shouldn't return him? Of course you should return him. So...
No, maybe.
So I wasn't really going to mention this, but because you started talking about Mekach Tos, so the Rebbe Reb Heschel in Chanukah Satera says a whole vart that Avimelech realized that Sarah was what we call an islandess, a woman who can't give birth. Now the halacha in general is, if you marry a woman and it turns out that she can't give birth, so then that is the quintessential case of Mekach Tos, of something. An acquisition that came through false pretenses. And in that case, no, the kedushin is batal. The kedushin doesn't work. You're not married. You're not considered married. So Avimelech realized that Sarah is an islandess. She's a woman who can't give birth. So, however, he realized that exactly. But that's what Avimelech realized. So then Avimelech is like, well, if she's such a woman, that really means that she's not really married to Avram Avinu. So she's not really us. I can stay married to her. Right? So the Malach is telling him, no. Hashav Eisha Saish Ki Navihu. He's a Navi. And he knew beforehand that she's an islandess when he got married to her. So if you know beforehand, it's not a marriage under false pretenses because he knows what he's getting into. He knew that she was an islandess. So he's a Navi. So therefore you have to return it because the marriage is still good. That's the Rebbe of Heschel's word. What?
It's still
Mashal
Hefek.
No, because if he wasn't a Navi, then you could say that she's an islandess, the Kedushin is bottle, and then Mimela you could keep her.
Return,
right? Only because she's an islandess and there's no Kedushin.
Yeah.
Yeah, fine, fine.
It is not money. Yeah,
yeah, fine.
Well,
that's the verse from the Rebbe of Heschel. What was I going to say? There's another verse. I meant to say this one earlier tonight. Another verse from the Rebbe of Heschel. It says that the story of we mentioned before that the story, according to some of Farshim, the story of Sarah being abducted by Avimelech happened on the night of Pesach. Right now, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Aleph, I think it was. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah says that everyone agrees that Yitzchak Avinu was born on Pesach. Right? Now, if Yitzchak was born on Pesach, and this story happened on Pesach, that Sarah was abducted by Avimelech on Pesach, that's 12 months. Yeah. So the question is, Rashi in the beginning of Parshas told us, it says, "Ve'elo told us Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram ha'lidus Yitzchak." So Rashi says, why did the Torah have to tell us Avram ha'lidus Yitzchak? We know Avram ha'lidus Yitzchak. We're talking about the descendants of Yitzchak, we're not talking about the descendants of Avram. So why did the Torah have to speak again of Avram ha'lidus Yitzchak? So Rashi famously says that the Leitzani Adar, the scoffers of the generation, were saying that really Sarah became pregnant from Avimelech. And really Avimelech is Yitzchak's father, not Avram Avinu. That's what Rashi says. So the question is, how could the Leitzani Adar say such a stupid thing? The story with Avimelech happened 12 months before Yitzchak was born, not 9 months before he was born. So, of course you can answer, yeah, they're Leitzanim, they're jokers, they're just, they stam, they're going to say whatever they want to say anyways, even if it doesn't make any sense. That's one thing. But the Rebbe of Heschel, this is brought in Chanukah Satera in the back, in the Kuntres HaAchron and Chanukah Satera. It brings a story about the Rebbe of Heschel. It's also brought in the new Eitzris Rabbeinu Rebbe Heschel, Chanukah Satera Chadash. It's a new sefer, they have it over here in the shul. By Agada Shel Pesach on Vayihi B'chatzi HaLaila, on the piyut that we said before. So he says that there's an opinion in the Gemara that says that what's the halacha in a case where you have a couple that's married and the husband goes overseas and 12 months later the woman gives birth to a child. Is the kid a mamzer or is not a mamzer? So the Gemara says Rabba Tosfa, one of the Meirah, his name was Rabba Tosfa, he says the kid is not a mamzer because sometimes it happens that a kid will stay inside the stomach for 12 months. So the question is, like, do we possibly make that opinion? We don't possibly make that opinion. It's a whole shaila. But the Rebbe Pasha says, from this story and that Rashi, it sounds like we do paskin. Because how could they say that the father is Avimelech if the story happened 12 months before? Alamai, you'll say, like, this opinion in the Gemara that sometimes a kid will stay in the stomach for 12 months.
Wait a second, they got two questions.
Yeah.
Question number one is, they have an Er Pesach.
Yeah.
The Malachim came to visit Avraham Avinu.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Right.
I don't know.
All right. So wait a second.
So that was Er Pesach, and then Leil Pesach was this story.
All right. So I mean, that's not the problem. Second problem is, why does Rashi wait until Yitzhak is 60 years old before he starts talking about the scoffers talking about Yitzhak's birth? Because I mean.
No, Rashi finds that Rashi is saying that the Torah is stressing that Avram gave birth to Yitzchak when it's talking about Yitzchak's descendants. Why does the Torah do that? And Rashi is explaining that this is why the Torah does it.
Yeah, wait, how come the scoffers didn't say anything, 60 years before when Yitzchak was born? The scoffers didn't say anything then. They waited, Now the Torah finally says, oh, now we got to say that Yitzchak is Avram's son, After the Akedah.
I'll tell you this. In 1948, there were a lot of Arabs that were displaced from different places in Eretz Yisrael and whatever. Yeah? Yeah. So how come in 1948 they didn't start saying we have to have our nation back and we want our country, etc., etc., etc.? Why didn't they do that? Because there was no Arab country. There was no Palestine. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. 20, 30 years later, then they started making these claims. Right? Why didn't they make the claims originally? Because if they did it then, nobody would take them seriously. After 30, 40 years, so people don't remember exactly what happened and what was there before, so now you can start making up whatever you want.
Say that people don't remember exactly how long it was.
Okay, yeah, you could say that. To answer his question, if that's your question, so you could say that people only really started these rumors afterwards. Because if you started it right away, everyone's going to say, it can't be true. But if you started afterwards, people don't remember exactly all the details. I don't know, I'm just throwing out an idea.
Can you give a simpler answer?
No.
A few points. First of all, the Torah is necessarily written...
I know it's not chronological, I know that.
That's number one. Number two is that the Torah was written many years by Moshe Rabbeinu. It wasn't written back then. So it wasn't the answer to the Torah. Because when the Torah was written, it was the long dead. It was written in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu through Nevuah knew already what happened back then.
Yeah.
So the thing about the Yitzchak Ador was that Yitzchak was in the Dmus of Avraham. As he, every year they kept on seeing that he looks more and more like Avraham until he got older. But the reason that the Torah tells us is that we should know that maybe the Yitzchak Ador were Hushkan, I guess, in their descendants, that they would make the same claim for something like he said.
Yeah, right.
That's what I think. Okay. Let's finish off. By the way, at this point is where the Marzu says over that the fact that Sarah was abducted by Paro and that Sarah was abducted by Avimelech, they're two different stories, but the Medrash over here is counting them as one test. It's one test of Avraham Avinu. It's one Nisayon. Like we were arguing last week and I said earlier tonight. It's one test. Two different stories, but it's one test. Fine. Another point the Radal brings down, it's an interesting thing to think about. He draws a parallel between the story of Sarah being abducted by Avimelech and the story in Sefer Shmuel, when the Aron HaKodesh was abducted by the Plishtim. But they're both talking about Plishtim, and they're abducting something holy. And he says that like Sarah is, in some ways, is like the Aron. If this was the beginning of this year, I would probably speak a little bit more about why the Aron, Sarah is like the Aron HaKodesh, but you can imagine. And at the end, you know, the Plishtim took, you know, kidnapped or whatever, they captured the Aron HaKodesh, and it ended up that they got all kinds of plagues and punishments, whatever. They ended up sending it back to the Jews with the cows that were singing and all kinds of presents that they gave back to the Jews. So too, when Avimelech abducted Sarah, so he got all kinds of afflictions, and then he ended up sending her back to Avraham Avinu with all kinds of, you know, with all kinds of presents and gifts and etc. V'yitzpala ba'adcha v'chiyeh. Says in the pasuk, Hashem said to Avraham Avinu, the Malach said to Avimelech, that give back Sarah to Avraham Avinu, and he's going to pray for you, and you'll live. V'yitzpala ba'adcha v'chiyeh. So after Sarah was returned back to Avraham, it says, Amar Avraham v'hem yitzpala v'nei Kodesh Baruch Hu. Avraham Avinu stood up and he prayed in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Va'amar, he said, Ribon Kol Ha'olamim, Master of the Universes, Adam Borasa Lepriya Urevia. Man, you created man in order to procreate in the world. Right? Lo L'Shem Yitzara, Lo L'Tayu Yitzara, Lo L'Shem Yitzara. Now Hashem created mankind to procreate. V'Avimelech Uvesa Yifru V'Yirbu. And I'm praying that Avimelech and his household should be able to procreate. Now they can't have children. I'm davening to you that you should have children. And Hashem listened to the prayers of Avraham Avinu. It says in the pasuk, "Vayispal Avraham elho elikim." Hashem prayed to the Hashem. Vayirpa elikim es Avimelech ves ishei v'maysav v'yeledo. And Hashem healed Avimelech and his wife and all his female maidservants, and they were able to give birth. And that was the story that Avimelech's children were able to give birth, people were able to give birth. One second, and the next pasuk is, you know, the beginning of Kriyas Torah on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, about Hashem pokad es Sarah, and then Sarah is able to give birth, etc. Chazal tell us that because Avraham Avinu davened for Avimelech, and he himself needed that, his wife wasn't able to have kids, and he davened for Avimelech, who his family wasn't able to have kids, instead of before davening that himself. So therefore, he got what he was asking Hashem to do for other people himself. So Hashem had it that Sarah was able to give birth first. I guess first or afterwards. Chazal tells in other places, they say that it was more like a case of a soita. That when a woman is accused of adultery, and she goes through this whole ordeal where she drinks from the waters and whatever. So if she's innocent, it says, V'niksa v'nezra zara. If she's clean, then she's going to have children. And the Gemara says that if she didn't have children before, so she'll have children now, or if she had, you know, children that had different maladies or disfigurations or whatever, so then they'll be healed, they'll be better, whatever, and they'll have better children. That's what the Gemara says. So Sarah went through this ordeal where she was kidnapped by Avimelech, and people accused her of, let's say, adultery, and it came out that no, she wasn't nichshol, so now she can have a child, like a soita. And the question is, the Rebbe of Heschel asks this question. I just saw this today in Eitzros Rebbe Heschel in Parsha. He says that, so why did it have to happen twice? It happened once by Paro, once by Avimelech. So he has a whole week around. I don't want to get into that. Yeah, I see you're like bursting out with your question.
Anyway.
No, I'm finished.
No, the question is that, how can Avimelech use an excuse that Sarah can't have kids
Therefore, the Medrash says that he kidnapped her because he wanted to have kids.
Yeah, that doesn't. That the two things are mutually exclusive. You're right. That Rebbe Reb Heschel doesn't necessarily work with what we said from Pirkei d'Eliezer. Or it could be that he didn't realize that she's an islandess until after he took her.
How would he realize that she's an islandess?
I don't remember. I didn't see the word inside. I'm just remembering it from my memory. It could be, the Gemara says a difference in Daf Pei in Yevamos. Says there's different simanim of islandess. You could tell how they have a certain type of voice. They have certain body defects or whatever that you could see. Some of them you can't see unless you're like seeing the person very intimately. So it could be that he only saw that once he took her. No, that's probably the pshat. It says he didn't get closer. You're right. You could, I don't know.
Nowadays, you can't tell if she told him.
What? Maybe she told him. Yeah, I hear. Maybe she told him.
70 something years old.
90 years old.
90 years old. But again, when she was 90, but the police team did this happen well before Ishmael even, no?
No, this happened the year before Yitzhak was born. This is the year before Yitzhak was born.
Yeah, but it's just,
so Ishmael.
She was 89, 90.
Plishtim was born before.
11,
12.
Yeah.
The stories of Ishmael. No, she was 89, 90. Ishmael was already 12. Ishmael already had Pris.
Okay. Any other questions?
All right. A good to walk.